I'll let JB do all the other intros. JB Boyd, y'all give it up.
All right, how's everybody doing? Fantastic. I like that there's a little bit of room up in here because I think this is a record that is a rare chance for folks to dance. I remember people maybe dancing to the Grifters one. It was more like a party. Hopefully this one breaks out into a party. This is a record that I've been fascinated by for quite some time. Actually, you know, it was a record pretty early in my collection when I was home for college or maybe just graduating from college. And I hadn't even thought about this. I remember exactly buying this record from Garner and seeing this interesting looking guy on the front eating a banana of all things, or an apple. He looked like he was an Easy Way. He must have been an Easy Way. And I thought, that's interesting. And, you know, I had never really explored or heard of Waylo, this catalog of music produced by Willie Mitchell at Royal Studios, but I didn't know at the time, after High Records had pretty much folded. So, you know, this is a record that's been in my mind for a long time, you know, just a little bit of behind the scenes. In order to make this thing happen, in order for us to be able to play a record in here, play a record in there at the same time, we need two copies of the record. So that's usually the first criteria. Being from Memphis, connected to Memphis, having two copies of the record that we could put our hands on and having someone to come and talk about it. Well, Billy Always is someone who I've never met, never gotten the opportunity to speak with until last week, until last Friday. I was finally able to chat with him. And I probably would have done this record a long time ago if I could have gotten Billy Always here. And it finally got to the point where I said, well, forget it. We're just going to have to do it. We're going to have to do it. This is too fun of a record. And, you know, there's quite a lot of people who've played on it. And I think this might be the first time we've done two records produced by Willie Mitchell, two records from Royal Studios in one season. But this one's so vastly different from the O.V. Wright record we did a couple records back, even though the core of the band is largely the same. The other thing I guess I'd say before I invite the guest up is that, you know, we've been touting this Let's Stay Together cover. And if you haven't seen any of what we've shared about it in teasing this event tonight, you know, when I first started DJing and playing records from my collection out, I would always have to really make an interesting decision about whether to play the original Al Green record at the height of the night. And I've had some amazing nights where I've seen people full on make out. In particular, you know, Central Station, New Year's Eve, when the ball dropped, before we went into 2020 of all years. I remember saying, you know, Memphis, there's a lot of people from all walks of life in this room right now listening and enjoying this music that comes from our city, that comes from our heritage. If there's one thing that I want you to do in 2020, it's Let's Stay Together. Had I known that we would have had the year that we would have had in 2020, I probably would have made out with somebody too in that moment. And I have videos from that makes me smile. It sometimes makes me want to cry, but tears of joy because we've come quite a long way from 2020. But I've thought of some other parties where I've seen people make out where I've played the Billy Always version and they're boogieing. They're boogieing hard. They're kissing hard. So I'm just going to say this. This is a safe space. But Jamie's got a camera. That's all I'm going to say. If you feel so compelled. I don't usually, a lot of people know me as Jared or JB, and they ask, oh, what do you have a preference? I don't have a preference. I rarely say my full name unless there's a really special reason, usually if I'm about to get paid, maybe a check or something like that. But I'll say that my name is Jared Lawrence Boyd, and I have an extended music family where Lawrence is an important family name. My father's name, may he rest in peace, was Lawrence Boyd. But I'd like to introduce you to the son of Willie Lawrence Mitchell, Lawrence Boo Mitchell.
Lawrence?
Yes, sir.
Needs an enema.
I didn't know nothing about you, sir.
Hey, This is the only person that we had to fight our way out of baggage claim in Los Angeles.
Oh God, that's
when you're really close with somebody. So we're glad to have you back at Stereo Sessions. This time, not during the Grizzlies playoffs, where we have to let you go so you can handle the halftime celebration.
Get Project Pat on stage.
Yeah, absolutely. How are you feeling?
Man, I'm great. I've been around the world, and I'm glad to be back in Memphis, because if I'm gone more than, I don't know, it seems like maybe there's a 8 or 9 day threshold where I'm kind of like, man, wonder what's going on in Midtown though. So I'm glad to be back. Thank you guys for coming out to see me as well.
I want to talk about you. I want to talk about the legacy of your family's business. And I want to talk about Billy Always in his absence. I got the opportunity to speak with him last week, and he's really thrilled. He did scold me. He let me know that had I worked harder to get in touch with him earlier, he would have probably paid his way to get here. So we'll have to find another way to celebrate. Maybe we can throw a party or something, like a disco party or something, have him
come
by.
Dude, yes. Because this record right here, like this, I'm sorry, I'm memory lane.
No format. Flow.
This record was, I was about 11 years old when this record was made, and Billy used to stay at our house, right? And so while they were working on this record for like, I don't know, 2 or 3 months, I remember the summer of 82, you can probably look it up, but I believe it was the hottest summer on record in Memphis. Starting with this photo, so anybody, I know Alex Turler, where is he at? He'll remember this. Scott Street Market looking. Yeah. Binghamton under the bridge off Broad. That's where this was taken. Yeah, I was just there, from making the record, this photo. My aunt Yvonne was doing, I don't even know if she credited herself, but when Pop started Waylo, my aunt Yvonne was like the art director and like making all these album covers and stuff. And then we grew up, like Scott Street Market was, you know, it was just like one of those family things. We'd go and, get your fruit and vegetables, get a bag of peas. My grandmother thought it'd be a good idea if the children learned how to shell peas, which is probably the worst thing I've ever done in my life. But yeah, this record was, it was, when I was just like totally committed to the studio, and I had kind of made up my mind that I wanted to do what my pop did, and this record was a big part of that.
Well, if we could, I probably personally could teach an entire semester's long course on the legacy of Willie Mitchell and his position as an architect of Memphis soul, blending the blues, rhythm and blues, gospel, jazz, and finding a way to build a lexicon around this region's music, and not just in the studio, but on stage and on tour. How could we quickly give people a digest who may not be familiar with, or if they did not come to the O.V. Wright studio session with Reverend Charles Hodges earlier in the season, how could we quickly sum up the Royal Studios heyday prior to this record, which, the shining star that most of us, the gem and the jewel of that era, many of us would point to, you'd be crazy not to, Al Green. There are enough records recorded on Al Green prior and after for you to clearly see a transformation and a transition and the impact of not only Pop's production and his vision, but also the band, the high rhythm section, and the character of the studio in itself. How can we quickly sum up that so that we can properly speak to the transition of Waylo and this record and what it means?
So basically, for those that don't know, Willie Mitchell was the architect of the Memphis Soul sound because it did not exist until he invented it or started it in around 1952. Everything in Memphis, not just Memphis, but other places, your black music was either blues, boogie-woogie, big band, jazz, gospel. You had some real, rudimentary early R&B records, but what we know as the Memphis soul sound, it didn't exist. Pop started that sound where he went to a small horn section instead of the
orchestra.
And then his sound became adopted by everybody else in Memphis. The Great Stax Records is a direct result of Willie Mitchell creating the sound. His influence was so big. Don Bryant, one of his first vocalists, was talking to David Porter and Maurice White and every other person that was trying, if you were trying to sing in the 50s, then Don Bryant was the one everybody was trying to be like. And Willie Mitchell was just, he was an innovator. He created the sound, and once everybody started adopting his sound, he said, okay, I'm going to create another sound, and that's what he did with Al Green and Ann Peoples and stuff. He altered the sound that he created because he always wanted a sonic DNA and wanted his records really to sound different from everybody else's records. He just wanted that distinction, and it led to, O.V. Wright Records, Bobby Blue Bland, Ike and Tina Turner, the Grammy-nominated Hunter album recorded, produced by Willie Mitchell. He, did all of this and finally got, the Al Green sound was so different that, the executives and the distributors and stuff they weren't feeling Let's Stay Together because it was such a different record. And Pop fought hard to get that record put out and played, and then it was hugely successful. And then they had a string of six consecutive number one platinum albums, which Al Green's the only Memphis artist to do that. And all the way up to a few things happened to get to this record. Stax, unfortunately, was shut down in 1975. And Pop took that really hard because, it was always a friendly rivalry, but he knew that, all boats rise together. So him and Al Bell would have these, he would call them secret parking lot meetings. And Al started telling me these stories too. So, 2 a.m. when everybody's gone, they would meet in the parking lot of Stax and just strategize on how to get their records played. And so Stax was closed in 75. That was a real big blow, not only to my dad, but just to Memphis music. About a year later, Al Green went totally gospel around 76, 77. That was another blow to Pop. Elvis died, so Memphis music took all these hits, and Willie Mitchell was still there, waving the flag. So when High Records was eventually sold in 1977, against Pop's wishes, of course, he stayed on as a producer, and then he eventually bought the studio in the early 80s. So around 80, he, you know, started exploring, because you had disco was big, so he started exploring, you know, thought he needed to change with the times and start exploring synthesizer technology. I still remember going to Strings and Things with him on a Saturday. It was probably my favorite thing to do, and playing with all the synthesizers. And, you know, it's a lot of that on this record from our Strings and Things visits. And, you know, he started his own label, Waylo Records, which is a long acronym for almost everybody in the family. It's W-A-Y-L-O, so Willie, and the A also covers the two arches. Y for Yvonne, the L covers my mother Lorraine and me Lawrence, and then the O for my sister Anna. So that's how he came up with Way Low, and I guess coming off of a high, he was way low. So that's how that happened.
It took me a minute.
So this record was one of the, this was one of the flagship records. Billy always was Aretha Franklin's godson, and my pop was friends with Aretha and played horn on one of her records. Well, my Uncle James played on just about all of them. And so Billy, he played piano, and he had this real strong gospel piano sound, and John Moore, disco hound in the building. Yeah, we're going to have another panel to talk about our history. interesting enough, like, Billy stayed at the house and...
Wait a minute. I'm sorry. I have notes.
I was at, you know, he was like my idol, because this man... I would watch him play piano. I'd get him to teach me what he was doing.
Well, I spoke with Billy, and I asked him how he met Pops, and he said it was through Mr. B, Bernard Miller.
They co-wrote I Can't Stand the Rain.
Mr. B was a local radio personality, and he was in the record business.
Yep.
And Billy had been working with Barrett Strong out in the Midwest, and that's how he connected with Mr. B, and Mr. B brought him to Willie, he says.
Wow. Yeah, Mr. B, he was like an enigma. He was a large cat, you know what I mean? And he had a real deep voice, and he had an air about him, but he was a real record dude, real good guy.
Before we talk more about Billy Always, and I want to make that succinct so that we can get into side A, but could we talk about the space you spend? I'm sure most days, all day in your laboratory, that is, you know, it's a heritage, and it's an heirloom, but it is similar to Studio A at Stax as far as its use before it being a studio, but it has all the character that it had when Pops recorded there. So for those who've never taken a tour there, I know they had a special tour there. Y'all did y'all thing. Yeah. Could you explain what makes Royal Studios different from any place on earth?
Royal, so it started out as a silent movie theater from like 1915, and it was a theater all the way up until 57, so the floor slopes. Pop, always not wanting to be like anybody else. So the recording studios, now and then, you know, you go in and there's wood everywhere. They have wooden walls, wooden floors, and that's a common thing for studios. And early on, Pop wanted his sound different, so he had everything carpeted, and he had the walls draped with burlap, with insulation and burlap, and the ceiling is insulation. So when you walk in the Royal, like, it's like a, it looks and sounds like a big pillow. So in the records, if you listen to those Al Green records and stuff, they have that warmth and that sound like, you know, a big pillow.
So Billy always is from Chicago originally, but his family's from Helena, Arkansas. So he spent some summers here in the area. And as Boo mentioned, or as Billy shared with me, his mother was dating Aretha Franklin's father. And and so that was the reason they spent a lot of time together, like siblings. He would, you know, spend time with Aretha as she was ascending in her career. I mean, really from the very beginning all the way until the day she passed away. He was a close confidant. He co-wrote with her a bit and did some other things behind the scenes, sang background sometimes with her as well. But he watched her career. You know, originally her sister was meant to be the star, and he was there from the moment that she decided that she would step out in front as the heir to her family. You know, her father was musical and was a pastor as well. And so we mentioned how he met Willie Mitchell after sort of becoming a well-known co-writer in the Midwest, and his lawyer helped him to start to build his solo career. And so I think that might be a good place that we could talk about what was going on with the creation of Waylo and you know, people like Perry Michael Allen and Hubby Turner, who I think I hate using that term when I talk about music, but instrumental in sort of pushing the boundaries of the keyboard work as horns started to be less of a feature on some of these records as they were in the decade prior, because this is after disco. So it isn't a disco record. It is after disco has died. Ring My Bell has happened in the summer of 79. The disco demolition night in Chicago has happened. But this is something different. I mean, punk and new wave and all that. I mean, Hubby was in Quo Junior. So, I mean, there's a lot going on in music and globally. But this is a down-home response to, you know, your Giorgio Moroders. I don't know if Wham was out. I'm a Memphis music guy. I don't know. Was Wham out in 82? I'm not sure. Don't know. All right. Well, let me hush.
Not quite, but yeah, man, the synthesizers, I still remember a lot of this record there. Michael Allen had just got a rare keyboard called the Moog Liberation, and it was basically the first keytar, but it was definitely way more functional than the keytars that came after it. But I still remember, you know, going to strings and things, getting the thing, and coming back. You know, it had all the colored knobs and stuff, and just the sound of that instrument is probably one of my most memorable things, because, like I said, I was 11, and I had it made up in my mind that I was, you know, I wanted to go to the studio every day. When Pop and Billy would write the songs, I'd sit there at the piano, I'd make somebody show me those chords. And you can hear Billy's piano style is a lot like Aretha Franklin. So you can hear that predominant gospel piano in this record on songs like Didn't We Do It, became a regional hit here, you know, made it to some charts and stuff, was in Jet Magazine. It was one of Bobby O.J.'s favorite records, if anybody remembers Bobby O.J. He played that record a lot. And it was like a hit in Memphis and in the region. And I still remember Billy had a he had a concert at before it went to what we know, but the club No Name, what Disco Hound was at.
Don't get him started.
Before they started Gangsta Walking and stuff. When it was more of a music club. But I just remember, you know, man, Billy had all these stage clothes, like, you know, Purple LeMay. He was wearing the Purple Rain stuff literally before Prince was. Like, I'm wondering if Prince saw Billy somewhere. It's like, yeah, I'm gonna get that coat. But yeah, he was really electric on stage, and yeah.
We're going to get into side A, but I'm going to read a couple quotes that Billy shared with me when we spoke about his relationship with Papa Willie Mitchell. He said, Pops was a genius, and if there's one word to describe him, it'd be a word he used all the time. He was real. He did not want to recreate Al Green. He'd been there, done that. He wanted to go to another level. And similarly, he said, Pops was not trying to go backwards. He was always going forward. That's what I respected about him. I don't remember him really ever telling me what to do. He asked, is that what you'd like to do? Then yeah. He gave me free rein because he respected my talent, my intelligence, and my writing abilities. Quite a few of those cuts we collaborated on. It was a mutual appreciation for each other's talent, even though I was young. He knew I wasn't intimidated by his greatness, and I think he really liked that. He knew I didn't want to be Al Green. I didn't want to be O.V. Wright. I didn't want to be anybody but Billy always, and he respected that. And that was ground zero for everything.
Leaving again and I'm begging for more. We just began and you run out the door. What am I gonna do? What is it coming to? What good is wishing when I'm always missing it? Just not enough. It's just not enough. We turn in last minutes, 2 weeks back, when every minute seemed like years were within it. But how am I gonna say I need you night and day? What good is dying when it leaves me crying? It's just not enough. Woo, woo, woo. It's just not enough. Yeah. spend my life with you. It seems since we've been together, loving you forever is what I need. Let me be the one you come running to, and I'll never, never be untrue. Oh girl, let's stay together. Just can't see, but you never do that to me, and staying around you is all I see. Oh girl, let's stay together. Then you
back, and I'm Jared Boyd. I don't know where my co-host, Mr. Mitchell, is, but...
Barbara's dance where
if I... Scott Street Market looking.
Looks like minds have been blown in this smaller room, yeah.
Let's be friends.
Yeah, absolutely. I could fly out of here myself. Maybe more because of those Crosstown Brewing Company beers I just had.
But what we had was true. It was just me and you.
Yeah, I went like two keys down. The Masqueraders tried to trick me into singing with them last time. Oh. I learned my lesson.
You know, the Masqueraders are... I think maybe them and Rufus Thomas, but maybe the only band that was signed to Sun, Stax, and I.
Wow.
The Masqueraders, I think they may be the only band that was signed to all three major Memphis record labels.
Wow. Box Tops never recorded?
I'm not sure if the Box Tops recorded at Royal. The Gentry's.
The Box Office recorded at Royal. I'm
really?
Sure. Yeah.
Shoot.
We'll figure it out.
Hook me up.
A couple of those beers.
I'm still finding out history and still finding master tapes. I found a Charlie Rich tape last year. So.
All right. Off the scavenger hunt. That's the next documentary we've got to work on. Okay. What y'all think of side A? So Boo, what comes to mind when you listen to it? I'll start there.
Dum 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 dum. My first love. Dum 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 dum. That man, when I was a kid, that was it for me. That's the first song I learned how to play. After that, I was like, man, show me that bass line. And you know, it's like I play piano, but the reason I don't. You know, people play piano. They, like, know a bunch of songs from a bunch of people. I just really grew up learning whatever pop was working on. That's what I learned how to play. So I'd go to parties sometimes. People like, play this song. I'm like, no, I can play you this song Pop wrote last week. But, man, the My First Love, that was... That was one that was had a real impact on me. Pop would always make, I'd get them to make me a cassette, like a rough mix of whatever they were working on. And that's you know, that's what I listened to. Didn't We Do It was the biggest song on that record. And that's Billy playing piano on it. And you can hear that, you can hear that gospel influence in that song, and it was a big record in Memphis. It, they played it all the time. WDIA, K97, Magic 101 back then, I think. So yeah, summer of '82.
Can we talk a bit again about the transition from the high rhythm section sound that so many of us have gotten accustomed to from examining the records of the 70s, and the evolution into, because there are a lot of people who play on this record. I mean, the core is there. The Hodges brothers are there, but there's no Bulldog on drums. Of course, Al Jackson Jr. had passed by that time. But Steve Potts plays on this record. I believe Willie Hall also plays on the record. On guitar, Thomas Bingham, Art Gentry, Harold Otis.
Harold Otis, yeah. Forgot about Harold.
And they're in there with some people who would have been on the records from the 70s. Of course, my cousin Andrew Love played saxophone on the record. Rose Charmel's Rhodes were in on these sections. The if you've ever listened to the classic Al Green records, on the majority of them, there's actually white female, well, white, two sisters, and one of them was married to a gentleman at the time who sang the male part. So a lot of people are bewildered by that fact that they come from
a
country background.
So the
actually.
Rhodes sisters, sorry, I'm meaning to go off on these tangents. The Rhodes sisters were these two young white girls. Their father had a country variety TV show, Dusty Rhodes. And apparently, in the late 60s, Pop was getting ready for work one Saturday morning and heard these voices on the TV. And one of them was 16, one of them was 18. And he drove to the TV station and was like, hey, Mr. Rose, can your daughters come to South Memphis
in the 60s? In the 60s.
I'm sure
back when
Papa
things were really
confused.
Black and white.
And Charlie Chalmers, who eventually married, he was a white dude, but he was a saxophone player. So Charlie was always around the studio. Charlie is playing, so Willie Mitchell's biggest hit, Willie Mitchell instrumental record, was Soul Serenade, and that's Charlie Chalmers playing that saxophone solo. And apparently, when they did Soul Serenade, it was like the end of the day, and the horn players had packed up, and Tina was like, man, I got another song. And they started banging out. They started playing Soul Serenade, and somebody had to go get Charlie out of the car, and apparently he got his horn out in time to jump in on his solo. But, yeah, those they did backgrounds on every Al Green, really every high record from about 69 up until 76, I think, 77.
Yeah, so this is, I mean, this is a different sound from what we're used to from the studio. And, you know, there's music and there's music business. I think both are interesting when you consider what was going on with Waylo. Without the support of the distribution that Hi had with London, and then later after being bought out by Cream, I mean, this was an independent venture largely on the business end, in the same studio, but with a completely different sound, but a lot of the same musicians and some new people sprinkled in.
Yeah, Pop was always, you know, he was always about giving somebody a chance, you know what I mean? His bands over the years have been him, you know, he was a mentor and taking young cats under his wing. I mean, the High Rhythm Section used to live at the house because most of them were underage. I think he had to get conservatorship or whatever, guardianship to take them out on the road because Teeny and Charles, they were still in high school. And he was just continuing that tradition, I think, you know, with the younger guys like Thomas Bingham at the time, Harold Otis, and he, you know, it's just what he did, because he eventually made more records with other, you know, there's Dave Kowser is on an Al Green record, He Is the Light, Steve Cobb, there's just, you know, he was a mentor, Angelo Earl. There's a lot of famous Memphis musicians, Andrew Jackson, that, you know, Jimmy Kennard. These were all, you know, the next generation of young cats. And he was still, you know, reverence the OGs and, you know, still bring a Leroy in, a Charles, a Hubby. And that was just his, that was just his way. And this record is a good reflection of that.
You know, we behind the scenes do a lot of advocacy for artists in Memphis outside of the studio, and a lot of that is just moral support. But there's an entire ecosystem. I mean, we're in a living, breathing laboratory and archive of music and music heritage. We are a radio station that is right here in the middle of it. There's a studio next door. All these different things are important. But I want to talk about promotions and marketing and understanding that in a new era and a new age and a new decade. Because this person just recently transitioned, I wanted to give him a spotlight and his flowers. But Willie Bean, could you talk to me about his impact in this era and who he was and
Absolutely.
Who he is?
Absolutely. So Mr. Bean, Willie Bean, I call him Mr. Bean. So he married my mother in 1975. So some of y'all know I'm actually Willie Mitchell's grandson, but he adopted me to perpetuate the name. So a lot of places it says I'm his son. So his Willie Mitchell's daughter, my mother Lorraine Mitchell, married Willie Bean in 1975. Willie Bean's history was, he was one of the biggest and well-known promotion men in the region. A promotion man is the guy that, you know, loads up the car with a few hundred records and drives to major cities, small towns, and beats down the door of radio stations and, you know, plays these records for DJs to get them to put them on the radio.
Hole in the walls with a jukebox.
Hole in the wall, like everywhere. It's a tough, it's a hard job. And Mr. Bean was one of the best. And Mr. Bean actually is where I got my music that wasn't Willie Mitchell music, like, because he would get, he worked for 20th Century Fox. He worked for all these MCA, all these major companies, and so they would give him promotional copies. So I got my Stephanie Mills record, I got my Michael Jackson Thriller record, I got, you know, all my records, my SOS band, everything from Mr. Bean and his. He started this thing. Man, it may have actually been around somewhere between 82 and 84. Hound.
He dipped out.
May remember, but yeah. Mr. Bean started this thing called the Tri-State Record Pool, where he pulled in DJs from clubs and radio stations from Mississippi, Arkansas, and Tennessee, and they would have these monthly meetings, and he got all the major labels to send him records to distribute at, you know, they could get all the records served. They call it servicing the DJs and radio stations. Get all the records serviced at this meeting, which was really like a cutting-edge thing. Like, nobody has done that before.
We get emails now.
Right. Right, which is so boring.
Very boring. Oh, we get a CDs stacked up in the mail. Yeah, well, so I highlight him because I know that he was a big part of of promoting and getting this new label out there and familiarizing the marketplace with a new sound from Royal Studios and Willie Mitchell.
Yeah, Mr. Bean and Johnny Phillips, Selecto Hits, well, all of his, Johnny, Kathy, Sam. Not this Sam, the other Sam, but Mr. Bean actually, so Selecto Hits was and still is one of, it was the first independent music distribution company in Memphis, and it's still one of the biggest independent distribution companies in the South. But they were in North Memphis on Chelsea, close to where American Studios was, and they had a record store and distribution in the back, and Mr. Bean had an office in that Selecto Hits building. He had, like, his office, it used to be a studio. I think Bowlegs Miller used to cut records in this studio. I can't remember what the studio name was, but so I grew up, I had a really musically diverse childhood. So I had Willie Mitchell studio making records, and then I had Mr. Bean connected with, you know, all the records from the outside world. So, you know, I'd go to concerts with Mr. Bean, would meet artists, you know, Stephanie Mills,
Luther,
the Jacksons, Anita Baker. And it's like Mr. Bean had the plug if I wanted to go anywhere, or if I wanted to hear anything, I'd be like, man, I want to get a copy of this record. Mr. Bean would hook me up. So I was really, fortunate to be surrounded. And his name was Willie as well. So I had two great Willies in my life.
That's awesome. You know, this series is about records that have been kind of lost to time. And we talked about it earlier. We'll hear it again. You know, Billy always cut a version of Let's Stay Together. It's funky. It's groovy. But he did not become the star that Al Green became. And, you know, Ovie Wright cut a record. Well, no, he didn't. Did Ovie Wright cut? Otis Clay cut a Waylo record. Otis Clay cut a Waylo record. Lynn White. Ovie Wright did a Cream record. It has a similar sound, but it's not on Waylo.
And
Peebles. I know that Joyce Cobb was working at the label. She
Joyce
put
Cobb,
out a record.
Yes. Oh, man.
Perry Michael Allen did some solo singles.
Lanier
and Company.
And the M Team. No.
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. The M Team. This is because I'm sure we'll cover it at some point in Stereo Sessions. One of the later releases from Waylo Records would be a rap group called the M Team featuring an industrious young MC who was not afraid to jump out there into the Memphis music landscape with a new style of music called hip hop.
Right. They told me that we couldn't say it was hip hop back in.
Yeah.
Pop tried to get us a record deal and sent a record sent our first record to New York. Our first song was called This Is Hip Hop. And the people in New York were like, well, they need to change the name because that's not hip hop.
Well,
which I wasn't too happy about.
All of that to say that, unfortunately, there were no breakout stars from the Waylo crop of artists. Although Billy always did go on to record another record on Epic, actually, just after this. So he did sign to a major label, and Pops did produce a couple of the songs on that record. And Pops also put out some of the surplus of materials from these sessions on another project. So there was a lot more music to come from Billy Always. And Billy Always, of course, through his connections, his Mahalia Jackson was his godmother, and Aretha Franklin, of course, being like a sister growing up, did a lot more music business and has continued to live a very happy life in music. I'll read another quote from him. I didn't get gold records from Waylo, but I got a family. He got the opportunity to work with who he said was his hero. He said on his record that was on a major label, he was label mates with Michael Jackson at the time at Epic Records. He was able to record at the Jackson compound and brought Pops with him. And he had a chip on his shoulder on behalf of the Mitchell family, which he felt very proud about. He said out loud, y'all are the Jacksons, but that's Willie Mitchell, and that is my hero. So he wanted to make sure that people knew where he came from and what made him proud about the music that he had done, even though he had moved on to a major label. What would you say and share about the overall legacy of this experiment of bringing Memphis soul into the 80s with a new style and new sheen, even though Pops didn't have the same support that he had the decade prior?
You know, it was a beautiful moment in time and, you know, some really magical music came out of it and experiences. And, you know, there's nothing regrettable. It was really my, but because of those records, that's what helped me to become who I am. It's because of, you know, my experience through Waylo from watching people record, to writing my first song. Lynn White sang the first song I wrote when I was 16. I wrote a song called Pain and Joy. And Pop wanted to cut it on Lynn, and I was just like, you won't cut my song? You know, and he did. And for me to, you know, eventually become an artist and just like, it's a real big part of my musical legacy and background and just, you know, shaping the person that I am today. And not just musically, but just, you know, as a person, you know, and watching Pop interact and, you know, being able to see firsthand how he treated people and the respect and the love that he had for people. Pop had the hugest heart, and it was never, you never felt like it was just a business transaction type. It was always love in the room. It was always, you know, he was a father figure. That's why everybody called him Papa, because he treated everybody, you know, with the love and respect of a father. So.
And I'll point out one other thing that Billy does rap on this record. He on the side B, as we listen to it, we're going to say goodbye and let everybody kind of mingle and chill, and we'll chat as we play side B. But I want you to listen for the song where he raps. He raps about all the other musicians in the studio. He raps about the Hodges brothers. He raps about Papa Willie. He raps about Willie Hall and his admiration for them. And he wanted to include that, not only because he said that it was such a joy for him to be with the musicians who, at the decade prior, changed the world with songs like Let's Stay Together and Tired of Being Alone and so on and so forth, But also that he wanted people to understand that rap was, his words, was a game changer, that it was a great equalizer that allowed it, allowed people who were not able to, and some people will say this is not a plus, were not able to sing to share their story. And so he said that he knew early on that that would be the great equalizer in music, and here we are 40, 50 years later, and that is still ringing true, for better or for worse.
Biggest genre, biggest selling record groups is rap and country, so.
Yeah, but I want to bring it back to one last quote from Billy Always, in remembrance of the people that we've lost. Although it's a quote about Pops, I want to give a shout out to Mr. Bean, to Howard Grimes, to who am I missing? There's so many other people that Teeny,
Andrew Love,
of course, and so many others.
Ben Colley,
many. I'm losing. There's so many. We could keep going, but he said that. Pops is one of the greatest human beings, but also just a blessing in my life, and that has nothing to do with music.
Amen. Same.
All right. So thank y'all for coming. Thank you for keeping WYXR in mind. Boo Mitchell, give it a round of applause for him.
Thank you, guys.
We'll see you for one last stereo session, and also continue to keep us in mind. As you know, we're facing a mountain that we're trying to climb after losing nearly $85,000 in federal funding due to the rescission of public media grant funds. And so you can go to WYXR.org to tell a friend about stereo sessions, but also to donate. And so tell a friend to donate as well. Tell a neighbor. You've got stickers out there. Stick it to the neighbor's dog. Maybe they'll run around and get into something, get into somebody else's yard, and they'll learn about WYXR. But we truly are humbled and pleased by your support of our radio station. We are for the community, and the community is for us. And thanks again for being with me.
Thank you, JB.
Absolutely.
And all you got to say is, it's okay.
It's okay.
It's okay. Willie on the trail, gonna really make you move your tail. And I'm Little Bill, your midnight grill. We got Teeny Pop in every bar, and his brother Leroy's bass guitar is wicked. Pick it! You know Mike and Huffy's got the keys, but Willie Hall has got the breeze. To the funk now, to the punk now. And all we wanna know right before we go, if the groove has got you toe-to-toe, toe-to-toe, can I rap some more?